Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kerbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Sam Molai. Sam is the owner of multiple law firms and the founder of My Legal Academy. Like me, Sam is trying to disrupt traditional models of practicing law and even wrote the book on virtual law firm secrets. While not personally utilized by Sam for subscription legal services, everything we discuss in this episode is about running an efficient, automated, and streamlined law practice, which lends itself super well to subscription legal services. I record these episodes a few months in advance of publication, so Sam won't mention this in the interview, but if you're listening at the time of publication, there is still time to attend My Legal Academy Live, an event happening August 15th in California. Link to that in the show notes. Thank you to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel. Links to both in the show notes and more on them later. Now remember, use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up with either of them since it lets them know you found out about them from the podcast and it really supports the show. I'm taking firms off the waitlist one at a time for subscriptionseminar.com, so if you haven't heard from me yet, I'll be getting in touch with you soon. I'm an active participant in the process of helping you use the subscription model, so I can only work with so many at a time. Thank you for your patience. This podcast is finally getting more traction, so please rate and review it if you haven't already to help others discover the show, and as always, please share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Sam Molai, thank you so much for coming on Law Subscribed. I'm so happy to have you. Please introduce yourself to my listeners.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for having me, Matthew. I'm Sam Molai. I'm an attorney, but I've been on the business development side and disrupting the legal market in the last 8 years. I run, at this point, I have 6 law firms. Also run an online academy for lawyers, teaching lawyers how to work smart, scale fast, and also enjoy life.
All right. Well, I couldn't have gotten a better guest then, because I'm all about disrupting the legal industry. Now, I'm coming at it from, let's eliminate the billable hour and disrupt the way we charge for legal services. But that's just one narrow focus, right? There's so many different ways that we could disrupt the industry. So before we get into your background, I'm curious to know is your why. Why do you want to disrupt the legal industry?
Because I worked in a traditional law firm in my first year as an attorney. And I realized that people are made different. And some people are meant to do what they're told. And some people, I think, thrive when they can pave their own path. So when I kind of got the opportunity for me to be able to build a law firm from scratch, be able to apply everything that I learned from books and watching a lot of YouTube videos from scratch, and I could see that, hey, if I do it my way or if I do it this more efficient way, then there are some huge benefits. I could basically be able to control my time, able to grow faster. I could do things more efficiently. That really opened up my eyes to basically paving your own path. And now for the past almost 4 years now, I've been on a journey to kind of share these breakthroughs that I've had for my own law firms and also be able to break lawyer limiting beliefs, kind of tap into everybody's potential. I strongly believe that people are a lot more capable than what they think that they're capable of. And I try to tap into that, and I try to empower people to be able to achieve whatever that they want.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you see, you had some great keywords there. And like, I almost feel like I need to go into the limiting beliefs thing. But that is for My Legal Academy and so many other podcasts. What interests me more, the subscription attorney, is you said be more in control of your time and be more efficient. But that doesn't make sense if you're billing by the hour, right? So like, what do you mean by that? I want a deep dive on that. Tell me more about what you mean when you say be in control of your time and be more efficient and how that works.
So in order for you to be wealthy, you need to make money when you're not actively working. If you are in a field or something that you have to work for your money and it has to be active, then you're always going to be capped, limited. You're going to eventually be burned out, because you're always have to do something to make the next dollar. And you could do it. And some people, you know, do it for 10, 20, 30 years, but ultimately you're going to ask yourself, what was this for? Where did I get in my life? Instead, I think people can tap into a couple of big ideas. One is scalable actions. That means drop those actions that are one-to-one. I got to do something to get something back. Instead, what if I put one input for many outputs, one video for hundreds and thousands of people to watch, one funnel, one website that could reach hundreds and thousands of people. Those are kind of scalable actions, your own actions that you that produces multiple outputs. And the second kind of power that's the thing that's very strong and that people could tap into is leverage. Leverage just means that you're able to do minimal output for the maximum, minimal input for maximum output. Same idea as scalable, but in different forms. You know, when I think about leverage, there's different types. One is, you know, having people on your team. That's the lowest form of leverage. Another form of leverage is technology, you know, using tools and things that could really take a lot of tasks off your hands. Another form of leverage is content, videos, podcasts, blog articles, things that you can write once or make once, but that could also be seen by people, and for forms of leverage like that. So, you know, I'm very cognizant of these powers, and everything that I do on a day-to-day basis has to align with those scalable or high leverage actions. So then when I realized this about 6 years ago, I stopped taking on calls from clients because it was a one-to-one. If I'm on a call with a client, that means someone I can't talk to 10 other people at the same time. So I started flowing people through my email inbox. And I realized, wait, even if I'm sitting there, flow people through my email inbox, I have to sit there and answer emails. Well, what if I leverage my team to answer my emails for you? And instead I could focus on creating the system that could bring on the clients and my team to the answer. So I was able to replicate it. I'm going to apply these scalable and leverage kind of actions to be able to kind of grow exponentially.
Yeah, I've been hearing more and more through like legal podcasts, legal YouTube videos at the conferences about getting out of your email and outsourcing your email to an assistant, a virtual assistant. And so this is one of those ideas whose time has come, right? Is get out of your email as a business owner. So it's great to hear you say that. Going back to the people and technology component of leverage. Right now, at least in the legal profession in the U.S., at the time of recording, there's a labor crunch. While there are some attorneys at big firms who are being laid off, in the small to mid-sized market, it's hard to hire attorneys, in part because they can't afford those big, expensive, big law attorneys who might not be willing to, you know, accept a lower salary in light of current circumstances, but they don't have a choice. They can't hire more people. So while that is one scalable thing, and while I would like to hear how you scale with people, I'd like more of a focus on the technology side of it. And, you know, you don't need to give away all your secret sauce, but even if you do, it's great to have a coach or a program or something to participate in that you have buy-in to make you do it, right? But let's start with the people and how do you leverage with people? They're not spend not too much time there. Let's get into the technology component and how do lawyers use technology to leverage?
So as you shared, yeah, there's a huge, you know, limitation and also, you know, lack of good workforce. And that's why it's the lowest form of leverage. Instead, what I realized is you got to make your lawyers more efficient. A typical lawyer is doing a lot of work, but you could delegate a lot of the 80 to 90% of the work that lawyers are currently doing to a virtual team. And that means, you know, collecting the documents, you know, managing the cases, the starting the filings, doing a lot of the paperwork. All that stuff could easily be delegated. But the problem is whenever I share this or, you know, people talk about this, people's limiting beliefs pops off like crazy. What do you mean you can't delegate this? No, art, you know, law is a sacred thing that everybody, you know, you need to do yourself. I'm here to kind of disrupt that for you and say a lot of your work can be delegated. You are responsible for our clients, you know, cases, and you still want to make sure that everything is foolproof and everything is reviewed and make sure that everything is good. But the first draft of it or the first leg of it does not have to be you. And you don't necessarily have to deal with the clients yourself. You could have your admins, your virtual assistants reaching out to the clients, collecting all the information that they need and even doing all the paperwork. That could all be essentially delegated. And then you'd become the last layer of defense to make sure that everything is good, checks out so that you'd be the one to basically essentially file it and get that up and going.
Yeah. And so even that people side of it, right, can be automated. The first pieces of technology that come to mind are things like Typeform or Jotform or Google Forms. You know, I think I've seen Microsoft versions of this too, though I'm not a 365 user myself, right? So like instead of having a human being doing the intake and collecting the data, that could be a technology piece, right? Like what are you using for your law firms? What types of that technology are you teaching at My Legal Academy?
Sure. So those specific tools that you mentioned are great. I've actually been a big user of Jotform since 6 years ago, and I've probably collected over 30,000 clients' intakes through JotForm. And just literally just yesterday, I was deciding between JotForm or should I consider Typeform. I went back and forth, did a deep analysis, and JotForm ended up being the answer. So if you're looking for the best intake, anytime that you need to gather information, look into JotForm. So that's for information gathering. There's two pieces of information you need. Usually that could be from your prospects when you're trying to qualify people. So that could be a good solution for that. Or two, whenever you sign up a new client upfront, you could basically create a JotForm or a comprehensive list of questions that you need answered, all the questions that you need answered upfront, collect that with JotForm, and then kind of use that to be able to save a lot of time. There's second thing that most lawyers need to do is to collect documents. There are some document collection tools, but we found out that it's just better to give clear instructions on how to provide those documents for us. Usually I recommend two options, either one, using JotForm itself. JotForm, at the end of the intake, you can ask, hey, upload your documents here. Leave it as a non-required question, just in case people don't have it at that point. That's one kind of level. That's where ideally you want to edit. If not, once the client fills out the intake, then we have a VA virtual assistant reviews the answers, make sure we have all the questions and all the documents you need. If not, then the VA reaches out via email or text to get those.
And before we even go further into technology, you and I have both mentioned VA's virtual assistants a few times. You know, I've seen, you know, none of them are sponsoring this podcast, so I'm not going to name drop them. But there are like some virtual assistant agencies that just sell to law firms to like get them to sign up with their virtual assistants. So talk about maybe the benefits of the pros and cons of like of having a virtual assistant and why every attorney needs one.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could do a whole podcast about virtual assistants. I've been utilizing virtual assistants for almost 7 years now. I still have my first VA from 7 years ago, still works with me, and her husband works with me. And, you know, it's a joke, but maybe her, you know, kids could end up working with me too. But they're very high leverage, very high ROI thing to do is to have as many virtual assistants as possible running the day-to-day operations for your law firm. In regards to how to find and how to hire virtual assistants, lawyers have two choices. Either option A is to go hire them directly yourself. There are platforms like Upwork that allow you to find virtual assistants. There's the benefits of using a platform like Upwork is you have a big talent pool. You have people that you can be able to kind of hire directly. And you know, that's a huge benefit. They're usually more inexpensive because you're paying them directly. And then option B is you could also use a VA agency. As Matthew mentioned, there's plenty of them. But ultimately, what I realized is that most things, most tools and expenses in life, it's not about how much they cost or what are the differences. It's about what am I getting out of it? And are you getting the value out of it that you should be? So don't get stuck in this, which company is better. I would just say any company that you've been exposed to for VA is good. As long as you utilize it, as long as they could quickly hire somebody for you, you know, in less than a week. The one that I kind of talk about, I'm not directly involved, but my mentor's company. It's called LegalSoft. You could look into them. They also offer a solution like that.
So with your firm's, and I mean firms plural, use of JotForm, in what way is that then the data that you collect communicating with the other data or technology that you're using? Is it, are there built-in, I don't use JotForm, so, you know, are there built-in APIs? Are you using like a Zapier or a Make? Like, how are you having it communicate with other technology at your firms?
Yeah, so JotForm just collects the information. Now you need to integrate that information to go to the next step, which is basically give a notification to our team. Maybe you use that information to start filling out some paperwork. And for that, I've been using the biggest automation tool online, Zapier. I've been also a longtime user of Zapier, and I've been able to take Zapier and really use it more and more every day. I've set up these days, I have 220,000 automations per month that are running through my operations, which is the maximum plan on Zapier is 50,000. I've been able to quadruple the maximum plan of it. And yeah, it's a high leverage kind of thing that you can do. Again, take information. Usually there's two pieces of information that you need to automate. One is what happens when leads come in. And the second is what happens when new clients come in. So this is something kind of, it's a technical part of our program teaching you, you know, we we have a team, a support team that helps set these things up. And I'm actually, just in 2 weeks, I'm doing a free training, basically called Zapier for Lawyers, how I automate 220,000 automations per month using Zapier. If anybody, if this podcast gets released in time, maybe we'll, you know, be able to get something registered.
It won't, but what I can do is I could promote the training and say upcoming guest on Law Subscribed is having this training. Go to the training, and then in, you know, a few weeks we could listen to the episode.
Or if you actually just go on YouTube right now, when you're listening to this, go on YouTube, search for My Legal Academy, find my channel, and the training will be posted there. Just go, you'll find the Zapier training. If not already, I've actually did a Zapier training 2.5 years ago. I've been talking about Zapier for a while, and it's all there. So yeah, just go to My Legal Academy YouTube channel.
Great, link to that in the show notes too. Sorry to interrupt your flow there. If you had other things to say, go for it. Otherwise, I have more questions for you.
No, Zapier is one of the best tools that you can kind of get exposed to and little by little start building out. These things, you know, these tools and stuff is not going to go away. It just becomes more and more, more important over time. And the lawyers and law firm owners who are able to leverage these things sooner, then they're able to kind of grow faster and kind of get ahead of the pack. So yeah, if you've been exposed to JotForm and Zapier and you haven't really implemented these things, these are really crucial, and, you know, definitely take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, some of the technology that we've talked about, Zapier and JotForm, you know, these are even arguably virtual assistants, right? You're talking about monthly subscriptions, you know, or biweekly if you're paying a VA biweekly, right? So this is the Law Subscribed podcast. So we're all about subscriptions. So what other subscriptions are you paying for that power your law firm, Sam?
At least 60 to 100, at least, if not more. And the reason is I realized early in my career that subscriptions are always worth it. Okay, I'm going to explain this why. Subscriptions are always worth it. The reason is, and I'm sure Matthew can explain this much more eloquently than me, the reasons why subscriptions are so amazing is it's once you build it, once the creator of the subscription builds it, then it doesn't take that much more effort or input to be able to take on a new client, right? Let's just take JotForm. JotForm, once they build a product, it doesn't matter if they have 1,000 clients or 1,200 clients. It's still, maybe they have to pay a little bit more for the server or the hosting, but that's very minimal compared to the value that they bring. So if that's the case, then in order for this for the software and the subscription to grow, people usually price it somewhere at the level where the most people can join the subscription. Then if that's the case, usually the value is much higher than the price that the owner, you know, puts for what this is. So the value is very high for subscriptions. So that's one idea. Second is, with just like in most things in life, if you use something, it's worth it. If you don't use something, it's not worth it. So let's just take an example like the gym. It doesn't matter if the gym is $300 a month. If you use it and it's a good gym, it's worth it. But if you have a gym that's $20 a month that you don't use, then it's not worth it. So it just really comes down, are you using it? So that's the case for me. I kind of put myself through that test. Every tool that I get exposed to, I don't sign up for it right away. I usually, at this point, I just park it to make sure that I actually need it. A lot of people like kind of get excited about something and to go sign up for it. Over time, you know, you realize that you probably don't need 80% of the tools you get exposed to. So first thing is I would say park it for a couple of days and see whether that excitement is still there. If it is, then what I would do is sign up for it on a monthly basis. It's a rule of thumb. Every subscription that I have, for me, I don't want anything long-term. I want 30 days. Am I going to use this? And at the same time, when I sign up for it, I put a reminder in my to-do list in 28 days to say upgrade. I ask myself a very polarizing question. Upgrade to yearly or cancel? And when I ask that polarizing question, within 28 days, should I be clear? Am I going to be using this long-term or do I really not need this? At that point, kind of decide whether it's for me or not, but kind of using this model, you know, I have at least like 40 right in front of me, plenty of tools. But one of my favorite one that I love and something that I've been preaching about for the last many years, and I think anybody who goes and implements it always come back and rave about it, is Loom. Loom is a video tool that allows you to quickly record videos on your computer. And it's perfect for whenever you're looking to delegate or you don't want to do something. Quickly click on two buttons, record a Loom video, and you automatically uploads the video. It gives you a link. You could send out, you can message out that link to say, hey, this is how you do this thingy, do this for me, and try to get this done within the next, 24 hours. And basically, I've been looming all I loom all day long just to give instructions, delegate it out, and then I kind of oversee the big picture.
Yeah, this is this that tool is actually also part of my talk on how to launch a subscription model for your law firm. And Loom has certainly optimized for certain things, right? Like the link sharing stuff, right? I mean, Zoom does this too. So, if you're already using Zoom, you can screen record. It's a little bit more clunky. It's not as streamlined. How things are stored is different. You have to have a good system and management, if you're not using Loom. There are other tools. Bubble is one. Even just OBS, if you're an OBS user for video stuff, then OBS also has a screen record tool. But Loom has done a really good job of sort of optimizing for the sharing thing. So asynchronous communication with your team, but also, Sam, asynchronous communication with your clients, right? So like instead of having to explain something to your client a million times, you could record a Loom explaining a contract, explaining a pleading, explaining discovery and what needs to be answered. And your client could watch it a million times and you only have to record that conversation once, right? So like how are you also using Loom in your client-facing work?
Totally, yeah. As you shared, usually, it's either you're going to be talking to your prospects. You have three parties: you, your prospects, clients, or opposing counsels. So yeah, for each of those, totally. You kind of have to make the video once, and you don't have to explain the instructions over and over.
Yeah. When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been so excited with the technology, and there's a lot more to talk about, right? But also, let's want to know more about the law firms, right? So you have six law firms. Are they all in the same practice area? Are they all in California? Like, how do you handle it? Like what was that process like? Maybe a better question for an interviewer to ask would be, let's talk about that first acquisition or that first law firm. If you just got it started or you acquired it, how that worked.
Sure. So the first law firm, the first couple of law firms, I mean, all the law firms are built from scratch. So I'm either a 100% shareholder, or there are some that I'm a partners in. And the ones that I'm partners in, I'm on the focus on the business development side, the client generation and automations and system side. And then I have partners who are kind of like, one is kind of like operations, another one is legal. And then we have one that's also on the business development side with me. So it depends, different practice types, different roles, but across all of them, the focus for me is always client generation, business development, and systems and automations.
So we'll just call you the ultimate rainmaker.
It's up to me. It's a lot of pressure, but it's good pressure because I know how to do it. And I could, at this point, I do it very passively. It doesn't take that much time of my time to bring in new clients. What I do is I'm very good at creating ads and funnels and automations. And I'm able to, even these days, like in less than 2 hours for a new practice type, basically get an entire system up and running and generating clients within less than a day. Sounds crazy, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. Certainly as a solo practitioner, my ears are perked up at hearing that. So, well, let's get into it. So like, what are we talking about here? We're talking about personal injury. We're talking about real estate. Like what are the practice areas that your firms operate in?
Employment law, lemon law. I've actually got into a car accidents. to anybody who's a multi-state the PI lawyer, let me know. I have plenty of clients that I could pass off to you. I've done property damage, which I stopped. I've done workers' comp, which I stopped. I do business law and transactional, like LLCs and S-corps. We also have the biggest service for ITINs, ITIN numbers, individual taxpayer identification numbers. And then I also have a folder full of 60 other things that I have researched and I'm potentially going to get into as long as I find the right partners to do it with.
Right, right. And so part of that too is, are you hiring? Do you need me to put a link to, you know, any attorney listeners, you know?
Yeah, that's by far my biggest need across everything that we do is just solid team, solid people who are long-term thinkers and are willing to kind of hold it down. My secret sauce with hiring is just to meet and talk to as many people, figure out what you're good at and what you enjoy doing. And then I have plenty of positions. I have multiple positions for every role you can possibly think about. So if anybody needs a job or anything, or if you know anybody that needs a job, find my contact information, send me an email, sam@malaylaw.com. Send me an email. I'm always, always recruiting.
Yeah, yeah. And that's coming from an attorney who has created other efficiencies in their business, right? So at the point that you're ready to hire, I mean, it's grow, baby, grow, right? I mean, once you're hiring.
Yeah, yeah. It's most people, let me also share one epiphany I had. A lot of lawyers, law firm owners go through phases where, okay, now I need to hire. It doesn't work that way. Recruiting is a nonstop activity. You should always be recruiting. Always, 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 day in, day out, be on the lookout. There's a really good book called Who. Go on Amazon, look it up. We're basically, you know, be on the lookout for people that you can always, you know, bring onto your team because your team is one of your biggest assets for your law firm.
Yeah. So you're covering a lot of different practice areas, which is really interesting. I mean, again, six firms. So how are you handling the billing? Are you still doing billable hour, contingency, flat fee, subscriptions? In what ways are you billing clients?
They're usually contingency. And, you know, a lot of it, most of it is pre-lit, but some of it is also litigation. But we have in-house, you know, lawyers who are handling the legal side of things.
Yeah. 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 And so, but unless you're billing by the hour, if you're a flat fee, contingency, or subscription attorney, all the efficiencies in your practice are absolutely necessary because you're only making money when you're making money. It's not about billing time. It's about being able to scale. So that's interesting to hear it's contingency. This is the part of the show where I try to convince my guests if they're not using the subscription model to use the subscription model. You know, depending on the clients, and obviously you'll have to do your own research on this, but there are even some personal injury attorneys who are starting to use subscriptions and making clients pay for the fees for things. So like court reporter fee or expert fee, and you pay a certain amount a month, and then instead of taking a third, maybe they take 20%, right? And so giving clients certain optionality, and that allows, and depending on the scale of your practice and the way that you've built it out, that allows for more guarantee and monthly recurring revenue. And depending on your volume, it could actually end up being a lot of money, which could allow you to have more money up front to go spend on more things to leverage in other ways, right? So have you ever thought about using the subscription model in one of those ways?
Yeah, My Legal Academy is a subscription-based kind of community and resource, so totally. But something I want to share that as we were talking, Matt, that came to me is when people try to create a subscription, they try to fit their service to the offer. Okay. That means I'm a estate planning lawyer. I'm going to create an estate planning subscription. That's the wrong way to kind of think about it. I think the better way is to focus in on the who, create a subscription around the who first. That means you pick a who, these types of people that just say divorce moms, or soccer moms, or whatever. And you ask yourself, you know, if I'm this person, what do I need in my life? What do I need in my life? And you have to basically create resources and things that are beneficial for this who. Start off with the who, instead of thinking about these are my services and how do I create the services around, how do I create an offer around the services? So create an offer based on the who first. It's a very subtle kind of way of thinking about it. But if you focus on the who, things become a lot more clear. Start with the who when you're creating a subscription.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And while I don't necessarily talk about it a lot or enough, is like having a client or customer avatar, right? Or an ideal client. And that goes into that aspect of it. If you've already spent the time to come up with your customer or client avatar, then your who is a little bit more actualized, then it might be easier to answer that question. So that's like another exercise you could do before coming up with a subscription model, right?
Totally. And I remember I used to hear about the who early on too, and I was ignoring. I'm like, yeah, sure. It's like a marketing fundamental thing that everybody has to go through. Like it's like a chapter in a book you have to read. But more and more that I got delved into, I'm like, no, it really is true. Even with, my legal academy, I didn't start off with the offer. I didn't start off with anything. The very first thing I did was I created a Facebook group, and I focused in on the who, the community, the lawyers first for 6 months, and I just focused on that, being providing the most value, being a good person with the right intentions for those first 6 months. And then afterwards, I went to creating the offer and then, doing my first pitch.
So this is great that you do have a subscription business, because this is what I love to talk about. So when coming up with the pricing for My Legal Academy, and I'm sure everyone could go to mylegalacademy.com or what is the way? Is it mylegalacademy.com? What is the
Yeah,
website?
mylegalacademy.com. And I love talking about pricing. And I actually have a really good resource that I got exposed to. And I'll share this epiphany about pricing today.
Yeah, great. Okay, so go on mylegalacademy.com, sign up, find out the pricing and everything. But I want to talk a lot more of the philosophy and the strategy around pricing, right? So like how was it that you came to using the subscription model for My Legal Academy and then came up with your pricing?
Two things. One is I typically like high ticket offers. High ticket offers. And the reason is it's not for me, but really it's about getting the ideal client. You're dealing with a lot better clients when you're in a high ticket offer. And not only that, you can also provide higher value when you're getting paid getting paid higher. Higher pricing, higher value, more attention, more dedication coming from your clients when people are paying more. So that's the one thing, high ticket versus low ticket. Just put that out there. I think high ticket is the way to go. Second thing is I found a really good resource is the not the founder. He's he actually this guy, Ryan Doris, who just took over consulting.com, and he has amazing emails. Their emails are so good. I literally print them out and I study them. So one of the things that I read is called pricing pockets. Pricing pockets means that if you're, and I'll share everything here that's in front of me, if you're within this price range, then you won't find much pushback for making it on the higher side of the price range. So for example, if you're between the $30 to $300 range, then you could potentially take that $30 offer and turn it to a $300 offer without that much change in the demand. So that's one pricing pocket. Another pricing pocket is between $300 to $1,000. If you're charging $300, could potentially charge something for $997. If you're between 1,000 to 5,000, 5,000. If you're between 5,000 to 9,000, 9,000. So if you find yourself in those pricing buckets, kind of challenge your own pricing, test it out. A lot of people starts off from within. First, people like don't feel like they have enough value, so they don't trust themselves to put it out there. This is what I'm charging for. But if you're doing something good with the world and you're providing really good value for your clients, then I challenge you to, increase your prices. And again, don't just, the increase in prices isn't just to increase your profits, which is an amazing benefit, but also you could now take that extra profit and make it even a better offer and more value. And that allows you to get more clients and provide more value to your clients. And basically, it's a win-win-win across everybody.
Yeah, that is interesting, and I am curious to see that and see like the research that's backing it, because I'm sure there is psychological research. Because one of the things we talk about is on this podcast is how you shouldn't give potential subscription clients more than three options at a time, right? Two is better, because if you have two options, it's pick between the two. If you just give them one option, then it's yes or no, and no is an option, right? So sometimes two is ideal, but no more than three. Otherwise, human psychology can't handle it. There's a lot of science backing that up. But these pricing buckets is also a super interesting idea that I haven't delved into too much on here. I have had attorneys on who talk about value-based pricing, right? So like, and this is normally when you're transitioning from billable hour to a flat fee or a subscription model, where what's the value of what you're providing? Stop billing by your hour, and think about the value of what you're billing. So there's definitely a lot that can be said there, and I think that what you just quoted, it will be super useful, valuable information to those types of attorneys thinking about that. But my question for you is, with regard to the market opportunity in the access to justice and latent legal market space. And so, without question, I think you're right. And I think there is opportunity for lawyers to come in with value-based pricing to supplant billable hour attorneys who could still potentially make the same amount of money, but you're no longer billing your time, or even more money, right, with value-based pricing. That's a red ocean, right? Those markets are using legal services right now. But there's this huge opportunity of people who can't afford expensive billable hours. And so how do you serve that market and also make a lot of money potentially, but with the same kind of a thing in mind, right? Like, do you have any ideas around there?
My strategy would be, in that situation, would be to have a completely free community. So nothing in between, nothing low ticket. I'd rather have a free community to bring them on there. And then on the back end of that is my main offer. I think if it's low ticket, it's not sustainable. I don't see it as sustainable because, in order for you to bring good value, it has to go beyond you. You have to build a team. You have to build infrastructure. You have to provide more resources than what it is. And that has a cost to it. So where's that money going to come from? So it has to come from somewhere. But if the intention is right, that you still want to, obviously help people and serve people that can afford it, then in that case, if that's the intent, then just make that the free community. And then on the back end, have a more exclusive, more intimate little community with maybe a little bit more support and a little bit more closer interaction to the leader to get value.
Yeah, it makes me think about the Council for Creators guys, who I haven't had on the podcast yet, but I think they charge like $100 a month, which is low ticket in a way. I mean, some people can't afford that, but like you're usually talking about small business owners who join that thing, and then so it's kind of low ticket, so it's like not quite a free community, but then it is like a community model, but you start out as a paid community, and I know they're upselling those clients, right? So I mean, we see that model working there. Is that also, would you think that what they're doing is also valuable, is have like a low ticket entry into that type of a community and then upsell later?
Yeah, actually those guys are part of our community. They went through my program to kind of learn how to generate clients and all that stuff. Yeah. But I would probably, if it was me, I would push that 97 to 297 and then really focus in, creating an upsell from that.
Yeah. And there's no one right way to do it, right? Like, I mean, well, if Sam believes maybe this is, there's one right way to do it, but there's no one way to do it, let's say. And so experiment, right? The point is do something different than the way that law is being practiced right now. So we've mentioned the website, we've mentioned the YouTube channel. Sam, you also have a book called Virtual Law Firm Secrets, right? So tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, the sub headline is how to run your law firm so it doesn't run you. So if you feel like you've been kind of stuck and you feel like you're like kind of very active law firm operator, then this book exposes you to a lot of automation concepts and actual how-tos of how to automate a lot of that tedious and repetitive work off your hands. And this is like, essentially one of my secret sauces, how I'm able to run 6 law firms at the same time. It's pretty much how I do it.
All right. Do any of your law firms have any physical presence anywhere?
Yeah, we do. And actually, over time, we've been gravitating towards a hybrid model. And I think the hybrid model is the best way. Virtual has its benefits, has its perks, and you take advantage of whatever that, you could turn into virtual. The way that we kind of see it, and I think the best way, is to have headquarters in-house with your key staff, like your directors, your intake managers, your attorneys, things like that in-house, but your day-to-day, like your intakers, your document collectors, your people that do the filings for you and et cetera, all of those will be virtual. That is by far the most efficient kind of model. Mm-hmm. Also bypasses a lot of, again, the issues that we have with like finding good staff. Well, you have a virtual operation and you don't have to worry about that as much. And then at the same time, you have good control and good management with your in-house people. So I think that's probably the best way to do it, hybrid.
Yeah, and a Google business profile you could have then if you have an in-person thing. And that helps with searchability and findability and stuff, right?
Yeah. But everybody, I think, needs to have some form of physical office. For me, I'm lucky enough to be focused at home, but I don't think most people should be working from home. So yeah, I think people need to go somewhere in and then be surrounded by other people too.
Yeah. My town is getting a WeWork competitor that's like a smaller version of WeWork. It's like not WeWork, but it's just like WeWork. And so I very much look forward to being able to sign up for that subscription where I could have like a leave home, but it's only a 5 minute drive, not even, you know, to go to this shared workspace and also meet with potential clients there too. Cause like I represent the small business owners, right? So let's see here. We've covered a lot. I'm really happy with what we've gone over. I just have, before I ask my last question, just is there anything else that, you know, you want to share about any of your, you know, what you're doing at My Legal Academy, other things, other lessons maybe you wish you would have learned before starting your own law firm that now you know?
Sure. So one of the things that I test has been the biggest factor in my growth in the past 5-6 years is been having a mentor, somebody who pretty much cares about you, who checks in with you, who kind of holds you accountable, who builds a vision for you, and kind of, you know, is somebody who kind of can give you feedback outside of you. A lot of people kind of have ideas and visions, but it's hard to implement those things if it's just stuck in your head. And what a mentor does is you're able to express those ideas. You're able to collaborate, kind of brainstorm together. And also, you know, if the mentor is good, then is able to kind of give you action steps. Okay, great. This is what you want to do. The first step is go do that. And that's the, you know, I have a mentor who does that for me. When I saw my progress of having a mentor, that's when I realized, I'm like, wait a minute, what if I was a mentor to other people in a scalable action? And that's the program that I kind of created called My Legal Academy, that basically, essentially, I'm a mentor to, you know, we have over 500 lawyers have joined our program. 500 lawyers have been able to get guidance on exactly, you know, what it takes to be able to grow an automated and scalable law firm. So yeah, if you've been kind of stuck and you feel stagnant, then I highly recommend, you know, exploring some kind of program like My Legal Academy that could really kind of listen to what you want to do, than a very specific regimen that could help you implement whatever your vision is.
Yeah, I think that's great. So with that, all the links in the show notes. And Sam, my last question for you is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
It is not a sandwich because that's not what you think about when you think about a sandwich.
Okay. All right. So that was a quick answer. You've thought about this before.
No. But it's important to be instinctual and trust your instincts and just say it as it is. Instead of overthinking things too much.
All right, great. Well, you've mentioned your email, but maybe just one more time, the best way for people to get in touch with you.
Sure. Just mylegalacademy.com or go search for My Legal Academy on YouTube. I have a lot of free content. I think I've been maximizing on how much amount of free content I've been sharing online. I post daily almost for the past year on YouTube. We also have a Facebook group called My Legal Academy. Just go on Facebook and search for My Legal Academy. Join us there. A lot of free resources and a lot of free things there.
All right, great. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Matthew, and props to you. Keep everything you're doing. I know where your vision is with this. Great job for sticking with it. And you're definitely the subscription man. And I'm always going to see you as that person and someone that I'm going to look into to get help and resources every time I want to kind of explore subscriptions.
Awesome. Thanks. I appreciate that. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kerbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kerbis with Law Subscribed.